I can have your attention, please. I'd like to begin the May 2019 Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board meeting. We usually start off with public comments. Is there any community input that people would like to give us? Yes?
I just wanted to remind the crowd that this is being recorded and it's posted on the Clark County website.
Right. Thank you. So just keep that in mind that we are being recorded. This is not my form. Not hearing anything. And welcome everybody. The first agenda item is Mary. You're going to be talking about the workforce in Southwest.
Yeah. Awesome.
Would you please introduce yourself and the background, please?
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for having me. My name is Narek Danielian. I'm the Director of Strategic Initiatives with Workforce Southwest Washington. Workforce Southwest Washington is the local workforce development board. We cover a three-county region, Clark, Cowlitz, and Wakayatham counties. And we oversee many of the WIOA investments, Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act investments, and we help convene all of the partners in our area that are doing workforce development and really try to deliver workforce services in a collaborative, coordinated way. And so I just want to give some quick kind of comments about some of the initiatives, some of the things that we have going on. And then I also brought some materials that I'll leave here for you folks if you're interested in grabbing it. One of them is our kind of strategic plan, one pager that you can take a look at, and then some flyers about our youth center, which I'll talk to you more about. I'll start with talking about some of the youth initiatives that we have going on. We opened a youth one-stop employment center back in August of 2018, and so we're coming up on 1 year of having that open. The center focuses primarily on opportunity youth, so these are youth that are in Clark County and they're either disengaged with school or disengaged with the workforce or both. They're 16 to 24 year olds, and we've got about 10,000 of them in our three county region, 7,000 of them in Clark County. And so based on that need, this resource center was created for specifically this population. We've been able to gather a lot of support from community-based organizations that are all co-located in the center, and they're offering services to the youth in an integrated way. And so we have folks like Partners in Careers that are located there, Job Corps, the Employment Security Department, ESD 112, a few others.
Job Corps.
So I think in total we've got about 10 partners there that are really offering services in an integrated way, but also providing wraparound support for these opportunity youth. The intention of the center is not to take away from what individual organizations or agencies are already doing. It's to offer that support in a collaborative way in one central location.
And where is that location?
Yeah, it's in East Vancouver. It's off of 136th and Mill Plain. And it's like, if you know where the WorkSource office is, it's like one building over. You can walk there and throw. What's that? Sure.
How many clients are you serving right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I have those numbers. So since we opened, we had we've had 5,900 visits. So and 785 of those have been unique visits. So we've had 785 unique youth visit the center a total of 5,900 times. 85% of those youth enroll in some type of program, whether it be an education program or a training program. All of the programs are designed to help youth either get on an education track to get into the workforce or get into some type of training program to get back into the workforce. And so 85% of those youth have enrolled in some type of program. And then 30% of all the youth that we've seen, we do a survey with them when they come in, have been referred by word of mouth. So it is really catching on, and folks are you know, talking about the center and talking about how effective it is, and we're getting more clients from that.
Do you have outreach into the high schools?
We do. So
you're not too far from everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. We work with the high schools. That has just historically, leading up to the opening of this, has been kind of a touchy subject, because we don't want to give that impression that we're taking students from the high schools. That's not at all what we're doing. In fact, most of over 50% of the youth that we serve actually already have a high school diploma. So it's not like most of them are high school dropouts. We do have some high school dropouts, but most of them have a high school diploma, and they're just not taking that next step, whether it be, you know, going to a two-year or four-year school, or going into some training program or workforce. So we do work with the high schools. In fact, we've held convenings with high school superintendents to just kind of share with them what we're doing and get their buy-in. And we've started getting some referrals from high schools as well. Yeah. Any other questions about Next?
I guess because of our focus is, how does a person with a cognitive or intellectual disability receive service?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the center itself, we've incorporated human-centered design and just kind of holistic wraparound support within the center. It's open to any, it's really open to any youth. So even if you are in the school, one of the things that we're currently doing, and this is the second initiative in the youth side that I want to talk about, is SummerWorks. So SummerWorks is an initiative that we've partnered with the Division of Vocational Rehab on, and we are working with special education counselors to get some referrals for students in this. And it's specifically designed for students on IEPs or 504 plans, and they're able to, get connected to some type of business for an internship opportunity. In Clark County, because it is that particular initiative is for our 3-county region. However, in Clark County, since we have Next located in Clark County, all of the students that go through that SummerWorks program have access to all of the resources that are offered at Next.
Now, is it an income-based service, means test?
The
services. Next, for example.
No, it's not.
So it's not 125% poverty level or anything like that. They just want the service.
Yeah. And so each program has eligibility. So I mean, for example, if Partners in Careers is offering services there that they would be offering at their home agency, and that service has criteria. Eligibility criteria, the eligibility criteria still stands. So some of the program, but I mean, we wouldn't turn a youth down if they came into the center. They just may not be eligible for a particular program, and we would figure out what they are eligible for and plug them into that. Yeah.
Okay. How do you support a youth that may be on an IEP and in a transition program? Can you accommodate that?
Yeah, I mean, we have staff members there that can, and we would really look to figure out the proper referral processes, mm-hmm. and make sure that we have the resources in place to do that. We want the people we're serving to be successful. So if we feel like, if we feel like a youth is really in need of a service that we can't offer, then we would try to work with whatever resources in the community that are available to help them with that. One of the things that, I was in a meeting with the Next director today, and she really mentioned a big need for mental health counselors. So she was just like, this is the big thing that we need. We need to have a full-time mental health counselor in the center, and it's imperative that we do that, because so many of the youth coming in just have trauma that they need to overcome in order to be able to take that next step. Yeah. So I guess moving on to the adult system, and I'm sure Michael will cover much more of the adult system in terms of what's going on at WorkSource, but I'll talk briefly about a few of the initiatives that were that are kind of on the horizon. One of them is Economic Security for All. This is an initiative through, it's a grant that we are applying for through the Employment Security Department, and it's designed specifically for people in poverty. This particular grant will be focused on people in Cowles County and Kelso. However, the grant itself is like a trial exploratory grant to figure out a model that, that then we can scale throughout the state. The intention of the grant is to help individuals get over 200% of the federal poverty line. And so we are focusing on people that are already in work and just need and just have barriers to employment to either getting employed or being able to get promotional opportunities in order to be able to get into those family wage sustainable jobs. And so that's one of the initiatives, and it's really in the beginning stages where we're applying for that grant, and hopefully we can get that, and I can share more information with you all if I'm invited back next time. I also want to talk a little bit about our recruit, train, place. This is another initiative that we are working with our state partners on, and it's being implemented through WorkSource. And it's a what we've done with this initiative is we've created a soft skills development workshop with it. And so we convened 8 industry partners from our 4 target sectors. So the target sectors that are considered high growth, high demand in our region are healthcare, manufacturing, construction, and technology. And we worked with industry partners, employers in our region, and went through a curriculum development process with them to really dig into what are the essential skills needed to be successful in these jobs. So what are those soft skills and those essential skills that anybody would need to be successful in a manufacturing job or a healthcare job. And we took that information and developed a workshop that we're calling Recruit Train Place, and it's being offered through WorkSource as of this week. Hopefully that will, be able to get folks into this workshop and then out into the labor shed sooner rather than later. So
you got a nice environment right now where we have the unemployment rate.
One of the other kind of initiatives that we're really working on is continuing to figure out the best way to provide services in an integrated way within our one-stop. So the WEO legislation, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act legislation, has a list of mandated partners that need to be in a one-stop WorkSource center. We have all of those partners in our WorkSource center here in Clark County. However, we're still offering services in a very siloed kind of programmatic way, where if a customer comes in and they happen to come into through this program, then we're offering services through this program without a. We actually do a really good job of referring, but it's not as seamless as it could be. So we're really trying to figure out how can we arrange our teams so that they're not program siloed and they're more functional and they're based on the 4 sectors that are in high growth and high demand. And so that's kind of been an ongoing project, and I think we're kind of to the point where we're ready to make changes in the way that we have our office laid out. We're going to make some changes in terms of the seating situation, and we really want to open up the space for our customers. At the end of the day, the center doesn't belong to the staff, and it doesn't belong to the state. It belongs to the customers that we're serving, so we want to be able to do that the best way possible. And then I'll talk very briefly about some of the employer engagement initiatives that we're working on. So the big thing right now is we really want a vetted talent pool. So we know that we have X amount of talent in this region, whether it's coming from WorkSource through training programs there, whether it's coming from Clark College with folks that are getting their degrees or their certificates, whether it's coming from Washington State University with folks graduating with their bachelor's or master's degrees. So we know that this talent exists. We also know that workforce is having a really hard time filling many jobs. And many of these jobs are living wage positions with an opportunity for growth. And so we really want to figure out a way to centralize that talent pool and figure out how all of these organizations and systems that are working on workforce development can work together to make sure that the jobs that our employers in our region are needing filled are getting filled.
So
on
page 212 of LEOA, it talks about supported employment and customized employment. Does that mean you're including those in your talent pool, looking at how employers can maybe customize some jobs?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, our work with employers is there's two levels, right? So first you work with employers to figure out what their skills gap is. You know, what are the positions that you really need filled in order to continue to grow and provide economic prosperity opportunities for the people in our community? And then the second part of that is once you are working with those employers is to really kind of change, if needed, change the culture and talk about the importance of having an inclusive culture in the workplace and really be able to show the value add for that. Because when you work with employers, and I'm sure all of you have some experience with this, they're thinking about their bottom line and figuring out how to run their business in the best way possible, you know, in order to have the best return on investment. And so to a certain degree, you have to be able to kind of help the employer understand the value of creating a culture of inclusiveness and be able to show the employer the return on investment for that, if that makes sense.
We had someone from Four Seasons come to our conference, and she sponsored this, and she would say, the question is, why should you hire someone, why shouldn't you?
Yeah.
That's the kind of attitude. Yeah. That's the kind of attitude change you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, will you come to our October event? Have you been to our October event yet?
I haven't. No. So this is my first year in this role. Prior to this, I worked at Clark College for a number of years, managing some instructional programs. And so I started in this role back in July. So I'm coming up on 1 year, and I would love to come to the.
Well, you're invited.
October.
Yeah.
October 2nd.
Awesome.
Four. So
okay.
An even.
Okay, cool.
We had to book 5 years out in order to get them. Yeah.
All right.
We're going to be there for a while, you guys. Good.
Any other questions or anything else?
Just a personal one. Don't take it wrong. Are you Armenian?
I am Armenian.
All right, okay.
Yeah, my parents immigrated here when I was 4 years old.
All the IANs, YANs.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who are part of that community in the East Coast. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I overheard someone say they moved here from Burbank. I live in Glendale.
Oh, yeah.
And I have family that lives in Burbank. Yeah.
So there's lots of Armenians down there.
Yeah, Southern California is
Armenians.
Yeah. Well.
Your own show through.
Yeah, a lot of Armenians, especially first generation Armenians, don't really identify with the
right.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
Well, any other questions before we go on? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you. Good work.
Thanks.
We hope to see you again. I think you'll enjoy the October.
I will be there, yeah.
We'll do something in between.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Can I have a project?
Okay.
Michael, would you like to share about WorkSource?
Yes, thank you. So my name is Michael Beckwith. I am the I'm a Navy veteran, been working with the state for, it'll be 9 years on June 1st. I started out as a disabled veteran outreach program specialist and moved into the role as an employment specialist for the veteran program. I was the supervisor for a short time, and now I'm serving in the role as the one-stop operator. I report to Derek at the WDC, and we have the two work source offices, the one here in Vancouver and then one in the Kelso that handles the College of Chatham area. And our office, as Derek touched on, in Vancouver is considered a comprehensive one-stop center, and that's because we have the majority of the four programs of the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, or WIOA for short, covered in the office. Title I is the training and employment provider, where there is money available for eligible participants to receive some educational training in those high demand sectors that Derek spoke about. The majority of people that we see are looking for a CDL or caregiving or other medical type field credentials, so they're going through Clark County and other programs. We have Title III is our labor exchange force. So everybody that walks in the door, and WorkSource is open to all, you know, we're open to all participants, and Title III meets with every customer that comes into the center. We also have a case manager from Title IV, which is the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation. So we have a case manager on site who meets with her clients in our office, and we also have a business outreach specialist that works with our business team very closely, and she outreaches to employers to help kind of communicate that those special needs of folks with the various disabilities, and she's on serves on various committees as well. And
her name, please?
Darlene Terry. And Tommy Mumping is the case manager of that work.
Counselor, vocational rehab counselor.
Counselor.
They both are PDR employees.
Thank you.
So the another neat thing that we've got going on in where we have WorkSource. So the WorkSource office in Vancouver, you know, we always have had a kind of an identity crisis, because when new people walk in off the street, they think we're the unemployment office, and I'm here to file for unemployment. Well, of course, that's all done either online or the phone, so we explain to them that we're not unemployment, but we can help you find a job. And we offer the services that we can for anybody that comes in. But another new center, how many people are familiar with Bridgeview, a resource center? So Bridgeview is a project that was developed by the Vancouver Housing Authority, and it's located on the west side of Mill Plain, where we used to be located. So our current location, as Derek mentioned, is off 136th Avenue in Mill Plain. Kind of hard to find because we're off the main road. Folks kind of have a little bit of a difficult time looking for us, but we're getting a little bit better known there. But the Bridgeview Resource Center, we have WorkSource staff working there on a daily basis as well to serve the low-income population in Clark County. And the Vancouver Housing Authority is also building that youth apartment complex behind the Resource Center, which is going to be housing youth that are transitioning out of foster care, and or who have already aged out of foster care. It's a program of limited duration. It's not like they're permanent housing forever, but they come in until they can get, you know, permanent employment and move on to their own housing. So within the WorkSource office, in addition to the DVR folks and the title folks I mentioned, we do have our veteran representatives that help serve our veterans. And they have a very specific group of veterans that are allowed. They case manage those veterans that have the largest barriers to employment. Homelessness is one of them, disabilities is another, and there's a number of other factors as well. The Trade Adjustment Act, we have counselors on site there helping a number of employees that have been affected by layoffs, affected by foreign competition. Most recently, the Georgia Pacific layoffs. We're helping several hundred of those folks maybe getting some retraining opportunities so they can move into a different career. We also have the Work First program, which is the program that helps parents that are receiving temporary assistance for needy families. And it's a job search, helping them prepare their job search credentials to gain employment. Another affiliated program is the BFET program, Basic Food Employment Training. Now, the BFET program is for Clark County residents who are receiving assistance through the SNAP program, supplemental nutrition program, but they're not eligible for TANF because they don't have any children in the county. And there's a significant population in Clark County that are collecting food assistance. So this is a program, again, that can help with supportive services for folks as they're looking for work. It could be clothing, interview clothing, or on-the-job clothing, and possibly tools to help them gain employment.
Do you offer any assistance with transportation, for example?
We do. For parents in the Work First program, they can get bus assistance. All customers are, we are one of the providers working with the Human Services Council to provide bus pass applications. But with the BFED program, Work First and Entitled One participants, they may also be eligible for gas vouchers or, you know, again, bus passes to help them get look for work and or get to work.
Now, do you also offer on the job training, OJ?
OJT.
OJT. As an incentive to employers for temporary
enrollment? Yes, we do. So the way that our on-the-job training, and there are also internship opportunities that we work with employers to try and bring someone into a learning situation for a very short period of time. Our on-the-job training, it's based on the individual's eligibility for those Title I funds, which are typically adult or dislocated worker grant monies. So if they're eligible for those programs, then they would be entitled for that on-the-job training assistance, which is provided to the employer.
Now, would an individual, simply because they have a disability, be qualified for that type of employer incentive?
Not solely. They would probably fall into one of the categories of employment. One of the grant funds that we have is the Northwest Promise, which is targeted for the healthcare community, the healthcare field, and it's designed to really target individuals from those underserved populations so that we can get more people in the hospitals, so when their patients come in, there's somebody that they can relate to, you know, more closely, whether you do the race, creed, color, or gender. So it's a program that's up and running, and you know, disabilities, I think, would be one of the qualifying factors there. I provided a number of handouts to you just for your information. We publish a monthly calendar, which is available online. It talks about the different workshops that we offer to all customers. There are five core job search workshops, skills and abilities, job search strategies, applications, cover letters and resumes, and interviewing skills. There's also a program that we've partnered with DSHS on called Strategies for Success, which is, Nara kind of touched on with one of the other programs, the basic soft skills type training that you know, you may have heard the expression, employers hire for qualifications and they fire because of fit, because the employee doesn't really fit the organization's culture. So this is a program, it's a six-week series of 4 days each, 4 hours a day, so 16 hours in each module. And we haven't identified the success of folks getting back to work, but it's been a very popular series with our job seekers. So on the calendar, there's descriptions on the back, and Strategies for Success is another flyer that I handed you. We also
This is every Monday, every Tuesday, every Wednesday.
Yes, sir. The only difference is on Friday, we alternate the two workshops that are on Friday every other week. We also have partnered with Goodwill to bring in Microsoft workshops. So they're coming in one day for a Microsoft Word, another day for Microsoft Excel, basic and intermediate. And then on Friday, they're there all day. In the morning, they're facilitating an advanced Word class, and in the afternoon, an advanced Excel. Participants can take a SkillSoft exam, and if they pass it, they get a Goodwill certificate saying they had that, which they can add to their resume. So we're really excited about that partnership because that's something that we did not offer. We had a basic computer navigation course, but we didn't have the ability to teach those other classes that were being offered. And that's one of the things that Narek and I do, is we try and tap into our partners instead of duplicating efforts see who has what and spread the wealth, so. And that's what the beauty of Bridgeview is. Bridgeview Resource Center is that, like Next, it's a conglomeration of partners that have come together to help. We also have a staff member who works with the Clark County Jail, and they've also assisted with LARCH, even though that's not in our area. She offers a workshop called Reviving Diamond to work with that population and actually gets into the jail to facilitate the workshops as well, just to help that, help them gain employment by overcoming their barriers. DFED, I included some information, and then Nerica touched on the four industry sectors. I included a flyer for each of those sectors. And this is a real neat website that our WDC has partnered with the partners in Oregon. It's careersnw.org. And a job seeker can get on there, go into a particular career field, and explore the different career opportunities. Entry-level work, mid-range, and then upper-level work. And see what the career progression is, what the opportunities are, and what the basic opportunities for salary are. So I think that's, the other thing that we do have, and we host at the Worksource offices, the Barriers, Accessibility, and Solutions Committee. Trish has been participating in that, so that we're, you know, helping gather all these partners together to help address the, not only those individuals with disabilities, but the 14 populations identified in NEOA that are the underserved and difficult to find employment. You mentioned earlier, Walt, about the low unemployment rate. Of course, that the number of folks collecting unemployment is a little bit of a misnomer, because we know that people have expended their unemployment, they're no longer collecting, and there's a percentage of folks that have just stopped looking for work. The folks that we have coming into our Worksource office today are some of the most challenging to find employment, so it's requiring a bit more effort to help them out.
Any questions anyone has? Anything from the audience that might help them better understand the benefits of?
What kind of numbers do you have people stopping by?
Well, in a typical one workshop, we would have 30 people just going to the resume workshop every week. We have literally hundreds, probably thousands of customers a month coming through the door.
Do you ever have people attend with a job coach?
We have. Not only job coaches, but we offer, obviously, interpreter services. So if individuals come in and they speak a different language, we have we purchased a product called a Pocket Talker, so the both the recipient and the interpreter can wear it and speak in a conversational tone, so they're not competing with the facilitator of the workshop.
It's like a UN.
It doesn't interpret for you.
Any other questions? Well, thank you both.
I just wanted to add, I think that Narek and Michael were kind of modest in the efforts that they've made to partner with the Developmental Disabilities Program. I've been attending the Barriers, Access, and Solutions Committee, but there's a clear commitment at the Worksource to look at how they're being inclusive to people with intellectual, well, for people with disabilities. They've done a survey of their staff about staff competencies and are looking to address the areas where it looked like there was some things to address. Michael and I are working on some trainings for staff and for people that go to the Worksource. So it's been, I think, really, at least I think, a beneficial partnership on our end. So thank you so much. So I just wanted to mention that.
That's a change, and we really appreciate it.
I like the fact that you're working with partners instead of everyone siloing.
Yes.
That's a really big problem.
Yeah. Are you guys covering autism?
The disability inclusion for business presentation that we're looking at doing has an autism focus there. So, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for carving out some of your day's
work. Thank you.
Thanks for
having us. I'll need these materials.
Thank you.
Trish, if you need Trish, do you think
there might be some of the extra. other people might need some. Can Kristen go next?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. So I was going to give you guys an update on the WSU MAP project. So just kind of an overview, and I'm sorry, some of this might be repeat for you guys, maybe not. And then Mary can jump in because she's been part of this project as well. For the microphone, Kristen Wade, Clark County Developmental Disabilities Program. So Mary submitted an application to be part of a project with WSU Vancouver College of Business called the Business Growth Mentor and Analysis Program, WSU MAP project. This project was part of a capstone class for graduating seniors, and each selected business is assigned a mentor and business students to work with them for a semester. We have four students, one accounting, two information systems, and one entrepreneur major. And then the mentor volunteers with them is from the business community within Clark County. The project kicked off in early January when the semester started with a meet and greet with the mentor, and we gave him Mary's famous 101, UDD 101, right? Then within a couple of days, we met with the students, and this was a kickoff over at WSU. And it was really clear that that mentor took the information that we had given him and taken it back to the students. And so most of the time that we spent with them was then jumping off of where we had left off with the mentor. After that initial kickoff meeting, the students were off and running with guidance from the mentor, checking in with questions via email, and just a couple of meetings that Mary and I attended. Each student, it was clear, kind of picked this area to deep dive and reached out to similar sized counties as benchmarks, spoke with DARLA at Peace, school district, employment agency directors, etc. And so then this all concluded just a couple months later on April 21st, so a couple weeks ago. They presented their analysis and recommendations. These young men did a deep dive in DD and did exceptionally well with the amount of time that they had to get a handle on all that we do. Their end goal was to present actionable recommendations to move businesses forward. And as you can imagine, we're a little different than probably what they typically experience. We aren't your typical private sector business. I think that when Mary applied for the project, or at least when I was walking into it, we thought maybe we'd get recommendations on job development and like business outreach for a business department. They provided a lot more than that. Their areas of focus were lagging numbers of customers served. So based on Clark County population and prevalence formulas as in the comprehensive plan, only 31% of individuals are known to DBA and eligible for state-funded services based on the population and prevalence. This is in contrast with benchmark counties like Spokane reaching 50% and Pearson, Snohomish reaching 46 and 47%. They recommended more intentional outreach to school districts, such as consistent messaging and assigning certain employment agencies to specific school districts. They recommended standardized entry and exit surveys as related to employment, whereas like we've always kind of thought more like about when they leave an agency, we would get do an entry and exit survey. This was about employment, which would get to some of the stuff we're thinking about when they come and go from agencies. They recommended enhancing customer outreach and marketing best practices, so kind of bringing us up to the 21st century. And so that includes social media and technology. They had stats that they presented about the business marketing best practices and how social media and technology is how you do it. And it's not necessarily paper flyers and everything that we do these days. And then they tackled what the return on investment or taxpayer benefit is, what we call it. They identified how that would be enhanced as we identify and serve more customers. So I think this project was a huge success. We didn't put an exorbitant amount of time into it, and we got very thoughtful recommendations in the form of a presentation and written report. We've already scheduled time as a team to talk about those recommendations and how to move forward. And I'm looking forward to giving you guys more updates as we kind of figure out how to take action.
I think we'll probably talk some more at a work session about.
So are you going to give those updates virtually or?
No. Yeah, right. I'm going to put them on social media for you because that's how I should be doing it now.
But, you know, the first time they asked for profit and loss statements, you know. Well, wait a minute, let's talk to the accountants, because that's not the way government looks, and they wanted 3 years, but that is only part of the biennial budget, and then across the county budgets, and, you know, so they had some learning to go on that, but those guys worked hard to understand what we were about, and I think as we've just begun, we've just barely read the recommendations.
Yeah, we just got this recommendation,
right.
The report.
So we'll be sharing it with you. There are some things in there that are sort of sensitive, so we'll just do some of it at a work session. But I think the big thing that we're going to have to address is the, what did Trish want me to call it?
No, it's the lagging number of customers served. So that 31% of customers being known to DDA based on population and prevalence, and then that in contrast to other counties, just kind of wondering, you know, how can we better that? How can we?
And I don't think there's been a lot of outreach until Chris got to DDA. It just wasn't something people over the years had time or inclination to do in the same way that it's being done now.
We're trying to make it busy.
Yeah. And you know, this is a this is clearly not just a student project, right? They didn't just write this report and they're done. It was the professors and the staff that are kind of in the department have a 6 month and a 12 month follow-up with us as far as like, what did you do with that? These students gave us timelines. Like if we were to take that report,
we've got deadlines.
In 30 days you will do this, and 60 days you will do that.
And you should expect these results.
Yeah, so it was pretty incredible.
I think it's good to get an outside
vision.
Yeah.
I mean, that really gives you information because you have these ruts or stuff and it's a change, you know. Like you say, all the technology now, that's how they
Any other questions?
Now, do you think that the students and the professors benefited from this as well?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about the indirect awareness.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I made kind of an off-the-cuff comment at the end of their presentation about, you know, I expect them to circle back around and give us business cards where they land in employment, because they're our, like, in at whatever company that is, because I think we've just created some, you know, it's only four, but we've created, you know, people that are going out into that workforce that will be somebody that will be advocating for supportive employment.
And they'd all had kids with disabilities in their classrooms with developmental disabilities, and one of the students who was one of the go-getter ones, well, they were all go-getters, but one of the students actually said he must have worked with a student in school at some point in school, and he'd done something.
Best advocacy is always to know somebody.
Yes, it is.
Yep. You can isolate anybody. The more we get to integrate people into all our institutions, the more we're going to have advocacy around.
Yeah, that's very true.
I thought about trying to get them to come and talk to you all, but this is like about their end of the quarter.
No, I mean, their presentation was their last day.
That was their last day?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean, they were done. And so, in with a bang, off they go. So.
But the mentor is job developing in the county, in county government.
Good.
Yeah.
So.
Were they seniors?
Yeah, seniors graduating this quarter.
One of them had a job already. One of them was applied and asked for a reference from us.
Yeah, one was already working, the entrepreneur was already working.
Yeah, he was already working, and we don't have a placement there.
One of the IS, no, the accountant already had a job lined up for as soon as he graduated, and then I think the two IS guys were still, like, searching.
Yeah, but like you say, what great advocates for what they did.
It was totally worth our time, because they gave us a lot more than we spent time in.
Return on investment.
Yeah.
Trish?
Yes, thanks for that. Okay, so I get to talk about Rag Day. So what is a Rag Day? So that is just the silly name that I came up with to describe what I did with our agencies. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about in our goals is being able to celebrate our successes. And I think that that is a really important piece of the work that we do, because usually what we all do, and I'm sure you guys can identify with this, is you get through a big project, get through a big goal, say, all right, that's great, we did that, now what's next, right? So I wanted to take a few minutes with our agencies to talk a little bit about what their outcomes had been that they've been successful with in 2018. And celebrating successes isn't just fun. I think it's fun, but you know, when we celebrate successes, we cement partnerships, attract more of what we want, what we like and want, and we demonstrate what's possible and describe what we want more of. So I think that is really important. I sent some information out to the agencies about potential topics to talk about with the Brag Days, thinking about people that we are supporting, their successes, customer support stories of progress, big or small. You know, sometimes the fact that somebody actually goes in, does a task, and then maybe leaves is a big success for some of the people that we're working with more significant disabilities. Staff learning, using technology, job leads, networking, stories, videos, pictures, special projects, board development, other things like that. So I went and met with each of the agencies that I oversee and collected some information, and I just wanted to share some of the highlights with you. So we have one agency that got 20 new jobs in 2018. And I think that this is the record for shortest time from the time they got a person to getting a job. It was 5 hours. So that person went to work with that organization and then had a job in 5 hours. And I'll say, since Katrina's here, it's Innovative Services. So good job. I think that's the standing record.
What's that job?
It's at Hyatt Hotels, working at a hotel. So, so that's the record to beat. So, yeah.
Jack got a job really fast. He got in 2018. He went on his job assessment, and he came home that evening and he said, "I'm supposed to bring paperwork like Social Security card, you know, filling out W-2 forms and things like that." And I'm like, "What do you mean you're just in your job assessment?" "Well, I met with someone today, and they said, I think he got hired on his first day." In the first day of the job assessment.
Wow.
Not hours.
Not employers overloaded SEH. So
okay. That's fantastic. Another agency decided to let go of the "I'm too busy" to job development, or "I've got these other things to do," and they really cracked down and got out there into the community and working with new employers. So they have goals around new employers, and so they developed 15 new employers in 2018. There was a partnership with Leadership Clark County for a marketing project. That I think has wrapped up by now and resulted in a trifold handout that they can use with potential employers. There's a WSU intern. Another agency had a complete rebuild or near complete rebuild of their staff in 2018, so onboarding was a major focus of them, of that agency. And all of those staff, I think, have been there for a year, so that was a good thing. And overall, we saw that our employment agency staff are focused on employment and had goals to increase employment That was their number one goal, and had a variety of strategies around how to make that happen. So it was kind of fun. We'll probably do it again, and I'll come and tell you more about it. Any questions about that?
I think it's a fantastic idea. I think they can inspire one another, get ideas from one another when you do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice to hear some good news.
Yeah, it's always good.
There it is.
Okay, Mary.
Well, Darla was going to be doing this, but she's not able tonight. Who doesn't have the, did everybody get the? Did you have one of these? So the legislative session. What can I say about the legislative session? It was the strangest session that we've seen in a while. And we had great meetings with the legislators. We all did great meetings with the legislators prior to them leaving, right? That being said, the budget things that they did, for example, transition. There are 732 kids at the time of the session starting. There were 732 kids that were going to be coming out of special education in Washington State in this June. The House funded 172. The Senate did a little better. They wanted to fund 400 something, and they landed on 350. So that means that we are going to have to get those kids signed up quickly, I think, to make sure the kids in Clark County have access. The state may be able to absorb some as people age and go out of service. We'll be able to absorb some, but they're going to have to go back for more in a supplemental. And so the House cutting it, when we had a great meeting with Monica, right? And she understood, Monica Stoner understood exactly what was going on in Evergreen School District and who we were talking about, and she had a lot of great ideas. And then we get this weird budget.
What was the rationale for?
There wasn't any.
Oh,
rationale. No, I can't see it. Oh, here's another one. So all through the session, everybody was on board to get rid of some minimum wage in the state of Washington. But in the last minute, Senator Walsh got an amendment in the conference committee. So it's only state jobs that you can't pay the minimum wage on. Well, we don't have any state jobs in support of employment that pay the minimum wage, nor does any of the counties that have supported employees, they don't pay the minimum wage. So it's in essence a bill that is useless. It was kind of useless. They did fund, you'll see, you can read some of this yourself. There was a lot of capital expense around the institutions, but at the same time, they are closing more than ever and getting rid of, people are leaving Rainier. Some of those people could not benefit from active treatment because of their medical situation, and they were never going to be able to meet federal requirements. So they needed to go into more of a nursing home environment and not be required to do this kind of active treatment that was getting everybody in trouble. So 60-something people were moving because of that. We got some additional state-operated living places, and there is some interest in that, in having some start down here, which, because of turnover of residential staff, that's okay. You know, I think we can work, the person in charge now is someone that used to be in Clark County in the office here, and we can work with her around quality, and I think she'll see that it is quality when she implements things. Nothing else, oh, except here is the very last minute. Speaker Chop, who was the Speaker of the House, decided to give the Thrift Crest land to some, what were you saying?
Community.
Yeah, to the community around him, when actually there was in statute that any proceeds from that sale had to go into a trust for developmental disabilities, and the money needed to stay in the DD system somehow, even if they closed the institution. So in the last week or the week before, the advocates had to all convene on Speaker Chop. And he's not running, which is why you saw Monica Stoner's picture as potential speaker next year. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can build on what you all, Merity, and I don't remember who else was there, but I know Merity talked to her, and maybe we can build on that. And he wanted to go out with kind of a name, but I think what he did was...
Did they stop him?
Yes, they stopped him. He's on here someplace in a very... It's the very last one.
Mm-hmm. $600,000 trust fund.
And it isn't $250,000. It was a lot more than that, mm-hmm. but it's probably in the millions. But so all those weird things were happening, and there was a lot because the governor had. Put a lot into behavioral health and getting people out of Western State Hospital and some of the other places and building community-based hospital things. Healthcare Authority told me that they got some additional state-operated living things for people with developmental disabilities attached, but they weren't sure that stuck, and so I don't know. I don't know. Because it's all on the governor's desk now.
Well, could we identify individual legislators that it may be worth cultivating a stronger relationship with?
Well, obviously, Monica, if she becomes mm-hmm. Speaker, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a given. And Annette Cleveland is Chair of the Healthcare Committee, and why she's always supportive and things like that, but I think we have probably underutilized our relationship with her.
Sorry to ask that, I should know. Hmm? But what our House and our Senate, what are the political majorities in both of those?
Oh, they're both Democrat this okay. time, but they still are, there's enough people in the Senate that it's close enough that, you know, one can go one way or the other, or you take, so I thought that this minimum wage was going to go through just fine because Senator Walsh had made that statement about nurses just sit around playing cards.
Oh, yeah.
Did your husband?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I know she got 1,700 decks of cards in the mail. And my son in California called me this morning to ask me if I knew about this because it was on CNN.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought that was going to neutralize her more than it did. So, it didn't as much as I thought. It might have helped a little.
Someone on social media took a picture of this bloody, like, I don't know what happened in that burn hospital room, and they're like, just another day playing cards.
Yes,
but it looked horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had a nurse friend of mine say, well, when she's ready to come right. in for a
procedure. Yeah, I'm thinking that
she's here. You can't get that IV in work.
Right.
So
this has just been a wild session, and you can see that by the happy and sad faces. There wasn't much around employment and little children that Well, there was Little Children. So Little Children are now with the Department of Children, Youth, and Family. And one of the things that also went with Little Children and Children, Youth, and Families is CPS and DCFS and juvenile justice, which has, is a really odd marriage there. So we've been told that there were going to be all these birth to three changes, and now they've said, oops, it wasn't in the budget, so it's not happening. Right? Is that what you said to me today?
I am not prepared to comment on that. Okay. Recorded. Thank you very much.
Okay. I do think that there is some movement on because they're trying to do birth to three, so like growth, like model what early Head Start is, which is 0 to 3. So I think there is some movement there.
There were major state systematic changes that. Everybody had been preparing for, and then an email came out saying we're postponing that for an entire year.
When was that? When did that email come out?
The last, less than a month, last 3 weeks. And so, for birth to three. So, those systematic changes are no longer happening with a go live of July 1 of this year. They're now going to be July 1 of next year, which in one respect is good because we didn't have a lot of information we were going off of, so everybody was kind of scrambling. But it's also kind of bad in our community because there were things that we were kind of looking forward to doing that now we're left in limbo. So that's kind of where it's at. And I think it has to do more with there was clarification that was needed that was unable to be provided within the legislation session at this time. Therefore, it has to wait for the next session.
And the special ed funding, when OSPI came and talked to you, she's talking about totally changing the way special ed is funded and incentivizing inclusion and things like that. I am not quite sure what happened in here because I haven't had time to sort it out. It looks like a lot of things passed, but how much of it, if any of it, changes anything?
The amount of funding that they put in there was pennies.
Pennies? Yeah. So now the feds are talking about fully funding special education, but they're going to cut everything else, so I don't know what that means.
Well, yeah, this one was removing federal funding from the special education.
Same thing that we were to apply for. Right,
right.
The partnership.
That's
in yeah. So I think that things kind of stay the same more than the changes that we were told about last
time.
So
that's the anticipated.
Safety net, yeah.
Yeah, that's not much for all the school districts in the state. Well, and we don't know what the governor's going to do, but his budget was pretty big compared to even raising taxes. They couldn't come up with his budget, so I'm not sure what the governor's going to do. I think we know that he's going to support the things, health care for workers with disabilities. So here's a bill that right now people can earn only up to a certain amount in order to do the Medicaid buy-in for healthcare for workers with disabilities. This lifts the lid on that. So people should be able to earn more money and not lose their healthcare. And families should no longer be afraid of that. They need to worry about the waiver and other things, but not healthcare. So that I'm pretty sure the governor is going to sign off on. I think he already did. I just can't remember. So.
Anything else regarding the legislation?
Darla is a little more informed. She's been in some of these meetings. Certainly knows a lot about the first press one. And it's nice to see that we got some housing trust fund money. It's $5 million. Doesn't sound like much, but it is enough that it gets the attention of developers. So it, that's what it started out with, when Dal Ogden created it.
The next item is a C-Tran update. And you heard snippets about the VAN grant program. Do you want to share what your experience is?
Yeah, sure. So they have some VANs that they're retiring, and our agency applied for two POCF, we are early learning program. We applied for two of them, and we received two of them, and there'll be a handoff, a key handoff ceremony on May 6th. And we are so excited and grateful to have them. So we'll use them for family engagement events. Transportation is a huge issue with our families, and especially in some of the outlying areas. So the ability to pick families up and bring them in, and part of our grant requires that we have a certain level of family engagement. And then we have some other creative ideas, like actually turning one into a mobile registration van. And so we could go to fairs or community events and actually enroll kids into the Start ECAP services right on site. So yeah, our staff, because I did my first virtual all staff meeting today and announced that we would be getting those, and staff were pretty excited about it. So we'll let you know.
We're excited to decorate them.
Yes. Lots of ideas about what to put on the outside. So, it's a great partnership with C-Tran and that.
You helped that well too? Are you part of that?
Yes. I'm one of the team members.
Yeah, good job.
We have 11 of them that are going to be given away on May the 6th. I don't know what exact time. I think probably in the late morning or early, mid to late morning on May the 6th over at C-Tran. So feel free to come over and, see these vans that you used to see with the C-Van logo and the C-Tran logos on it. Now, butt naked. Well, eliminating all.
You're gonna take it off.
I got your attention, didn't I? Sex sells.
Not our van.
You're gonna take it back to that preschool.
But and I think that you're gonna see this more and more, because as we're rotating the fleets and going past their prescribed length of time, we're going to work with the community on that. So,
these are deals to be adjusted to put more seats inside?
No, because the seats in the vehicles that were given away pulled up in order to give a greater area for securements. We're actually including the securements with the vans.
In the lift.
In the lift, too.
Yeah.
And
but if you don't need those, then you just put everything on, you can fit more people in them. If you don't
say
need
again. Depending upon what the need is, it's adjustable that you can lower the seats, and have more ambulatory folks, or lift them up because you have need for more walkers, more wheelchairs, scooters, and stuff like that. So I'm really proud of the agency and the direction that Sean and the executive team led with doing this, because this has been something we've been talking about and trying to do for multiple years. Another thing that's, a multiple year fruition is what is called the Community Access Van. And that's through the 5310 New Freedom Funds, where the Human Services Council will operate almost like a lend-lease vehicle that will provide an opportunity for different organizations that are qualified and that have a driver to have the volunteer drivers maybe transport the best example I use is the Special Olympics, or maybe possibly a senior shopping shuttle, stuff like that. So we're going to be working with them to purchase a new van. And in the meantime, we're going to give them, as part of the Volunteers in Motion project, two Toyota Siennas that, again, we're rotating out of the fleet. They don't have to have any type of special driver's licenses for that, but it gives a chance to provide some practice for the eventual rollout, probably late this year, early next year with the community access. And that's something that has been a dream of ours for many, many years. So it's just like Christmas in May. Trying to think what else. We have the BRT, the Mill Plain Bus Rapid Transit, is moving along, making great success. And then, and the advantage of that for people with disabilities is the fact that they may not need to have, because we have the bus rapid transit close enough to them, where they don't need C-band services, they don't need to have to make a reservation ahead of time, and they can just get on transit and go. And that was the whole point of the ADA, was equal access. And
plus, you're buying the ridership. Is it going up?
Yes, it is significantly. Yeah, yeah.
Over 45% year over year.
Oh wow!
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
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 Yeah, it's a very popular line. It was to begin with, but when you bring in something like level boarding and frequency like that, mm-hmm. and then there's also plans this September with a service change to emulate what a bus rapid transit would be going north-south of Highway 99. So
I ran into Walt. I took my class out. We were learning on accessing public transportation, excuse me. And so we got a connector from Camas High School, and we went, we took us down to the Fisher's Land Center, and lo and behold, we ran into Walt. And then we shot out to the Vancouver Transit Center, and so we're going to be doing another one this month. So, but it's, and again, it's about providing them opportunities to the kids from there in high school so they know how to access those services once they're from secondary and beyond. So. Also, too, we're going to be opening up our new administration office. This is going to be an administration office. The end of May, beginning of June-ish. And,
where?
It's going to be a big deal because it's going to be a new location for our CTRAN board meetings. It's going to have all the administration, the bulk of the administration offices, our office administration down there, as well as it's going to have some shared community spaces.
Travel training,
yeah, travel customer service.
Where?
It's the old Richard Pinchot building.
Oh, yeah. Here at the YMCA.
It's off of Chuckle. Yeah.
It's 51st Street, I think. Applebee's, yeah. Applebee's. State Patrol. Once we get rid of all of the administration, then we're going to be tearing down the current administration building to build a brand new, not brand new, but expand the maintenance facilities and a new operations center. And because the operation center we currently have, which is modular units that were had a useful life of thinking 5 years and have been in there 12. And we need more space for buses, and that's part of where it's going to be. So you're going to see a lot of changes in the next couple of years.
What's our population going like?
When we get the data, maybe Walt can send it out.
Oh, right.
Celebration. Right. We should all, mm-hmm. and we should send it to the agencies and everybody on the mm-hmm. board list.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah. So that's all from C-TRAN. Adrian, can you think of it?
That's all I can.
So, Mary?
Okay, yeah. I have two things. I know there's only one listed, but oh well. So there's a housing project that is having a conference. It's the culmination of the housing project. I don't remember, or I remember there was a young woman that came and spoke about housing to you, and she did a needs assessment for you. And now there's a conference, and the conference is May 3rd, 13th, all day at Heathman. It's free, lunch is provided, but there aren't very many spaces left, so go on the Heath website if you want to register.
And I'm going.
Are you going? Good.
Jackie and I were supposed to speak at that.
Well, you probably still are supposed to speak at that.
I might not be able to. I'm going to meet tomorrow, so.
You are tomorrow.
For sure you need it.
I do need it. But Jackie will be there. She's the better half.
By far. Well, it's going to be infrastructure, technology, and then workforce kinds of issues. Then the last thing that I didn't get on the agenda was last Friday and Saturday, we finally got the University of Washington to come south of Longview. I want you to pause for silence because it's a momentous occasion. They provided a Center of Excellence training from the Autism Center at the UW. Now, in order for someone to be able to diagnose autism and have it accepted by DDA and some other agencies, it needs to be diagnosed by certain kinds of people, a developmental pediatrician or a pediatrician family practice person that has gone through this training. So we've got people from the Vancouver Clinic raise their hands that they want to participate, and CMAR raise their hands, they want to participate. Peace Health, I'm not sure. There were a lot of people, a lot of docs from Longview, and I couldn't tell who was from Vancouver. Catholic Community Services, their psychiatrist kind of raised his hand, and
Legacy?
Catholic Community Services.
Legacy.
Oh, Legacy, yeah. They already had a speech-language person and a team that had that capability, but their developmental pediatrician came over from Randall Children's Hospital, and so she's now blessed in both states to diagnose. So we went from having no ability to diagnose autism in Clark County to having these people that are just starting out. The U will walk with them and mentor them, and they're trying to do a learning cohort. One of the things I couldn't figure out from this budget that Darla might know is they wanted some funding, the healthcare authority wanted some funding to replicate the funding, the training they did with us in other parts of the state, and to develop kind of a distance cohort. Mm-hmm. Now the next step, and I'm doing the long version because these two are sitting here, the next step is to develop what they call SMART teams, which is school, medical, autism research teams. And so I'm going to have to get with the school districts and get somehow, I'm not sure who's supposed to talk to them, but I'll be getting with the school districts.
And wonderful.
It is.
I just had my health manager talk about the problem of not being able to get our kids diagnosed.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
Right, so tell them there's hope in the future. And if the kids are low income, there were some pretty cool people from CMAR, but now they were from CMAR all over Western Washington, so I don't know how many were from us, but there were some.
That's great.
All we need is a couple
in
each of these clinics. And the one family practice person at Vancouver Clinic, she will be able to cover authorizing treatment and diagnosis that a pediatrician in that clinic then.
Oh, that's
so
huge.
So they're working out a network there.
That's huge.
So stay tuned, and give people that need to know, tell them that there's hope. And then DDA should know that you should be getting better paperwork we might have to, I don't know what the next steps exactly are. People ended on Saturday and they went home kind of tired, so, so stay tuned.
Do any of the members have anything they'd like to bring up as far as new items or concerns or suggestions?
I just want to thank Tricia for our work session that you did. You did a phenomenal job, and I look forward to more of that work. And you did a really great job.
Thank you. Just for those of you that weren't at the work session, the department is doing some work around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think that what we're finding is that we have some work to do in our department. And so I did a piece with the advisory board around the agreements. They graciously allowed me to do some practice. I was fortunate enough to attend a facilitator training about facilitating conversations about racism, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so they were gracious to let me do some practice, and I introduced what we call the agreements, which are agreements about having conversations around race. So thank you.
And we are collecting, the state is cooperating with us around data, so are people getting, we're concerned about equal access and appropriate access, and you know, our agencies getting jobs for people equally. And so we've been looking at that, and we will share with you what we know when we ask for another data poll.
Anything else? Going once, going twice, adjourned.